Alright, let's go ahead and take you on a tour of the Linksys WRT300N. This is a wireless access point and a four-port switch rolled into one, which is why it's called an integrated service router. So, what you do is you find the router's IP address, you go to your favorite internet browser, and you log into it just like you would going to a regular web page. So you put the IP address of the router in your address bar of your browser, and then it will come up to a screen that says connect, or it will ask you for a username and password. By default, the IP address is 192.168.1.1. Your username is blank. Your password is admin in lowercase. And I'll show you where to change your password. Your username is always going to be blank, it looks like, on the WRT300N, because they do not provide a place to change that. So, here we go. I've already logged in, and it comes up to basic setup. And it comes up, gives us our firmware version, which is 1.03.6. And you have several links to change over to, from setup to wireless, which will get you access to your wireless setup and a few other things that we'll go into. Security, access restrictions, applications and gaming, administration, and status. Now, the main screen under your setup, and the first screen when you log in, is basic setup. Then there's a DDNS, and the MAC address clone, which is used if you have to have a specific MAC address for your ISP. And then there's advanced routing, but we don't need either the DDNS, the MAC address clone, or the advanced routing right now. So I'm not going to cover those in this recording. If you need them, they're available on the internet. You can just go pull the manual for the WRT300N, and it should tell you what you need to know. Alright, so under basic setup, your first section is internet setup. And what this gives you is a first option is internet connection type. In the case of mine, it's PPPoE, which is a point-to-point over Ethernet. And that is used for, at least my ISP requires that. You have automatic, which is DHCP. You have manual, which you can put in an IP address, the gateway, and the subnet mask for your ISP. There are some that require that. And then you have PPTP, which is point-to-point tunnel protocol, which, according to HELP, is used over in Europe. Then you have LTP and Telstra, it's T-E-L-S-T-R-A, which, according to HELP, is used down in Australia. So that's all your internet connection types there. Username and password are given to you by your ISP. There is a service name, which ISPs may or may not require. Mine doesn't, so it's blank. There are two options to connect. There's a connect on demand, which there's an edit box with, and what this does is it will allow you to connect. Actually, what it will do is it will disconnect after so long of your being idle on the internet. In this case, the time is 15 minutes. So for instance, if I was idle for 15 minutes on the internet and I had this option checked, it would disconnect. And then when I wanted something, it would reconnect when it saw the request go out to the internet. And then the second option is keep alive, which is the one that I have checked. There's a redial period, which is 20 seconds on mine. The default is 30. So what happens with this is when the router's going to check, like every so often, in my case 20 seconds, or however long you put in the edit box, and it will check that specified period of time, and it will redial a connection if it is not active. Okay, there's a separator here. It's another section with optional settings, which may or may not be required by your ISP. Check with your ISP, because these may or may not be necessary. There's a host name and a domain name which can be set. And in my case, neither one of those are set because they don't need to be. MTU, which is your maximum transmission unit. Now, mine is set to auto, which is probably what you want it to set to anyway. And there's an edit box that says 1492. And so, that's that. Then you have another section for your network setup. Now, this is where you set up your internal network. This is stuff that your ISP is never going to see. So your router IP, which is considered your default gateway as well, you can set this pretty much to anything that you actually need to or want to. In my case, it's 10.0.0.5. My subnet mask is 255.255.255.0. And that's all in that section. So, just make sure when you do this that your subnet mask and your IP set right on your computers, otherwise you're not going to connect. DHCP server settings, because this is a router, it can be a DHCP server as well. And in my case, it is enabled, because quite frankly, I don't feel like assigning static IP addresses to everything on my network. There is a DHCP reservation, so that if you have a particular IP address or a particular computer that you want assigned a particular IP address, you click that DHCP reservation button, and then it goes through, and you can check the boxes next to the ones that you want to reserve, and it will reserve them. Start IP address, in my case, is 10.0.0.100 based on subnet mask. My network is 10.0.0. Starting IP address is 100. The maximum number of users is 50, which then it gives the IP address range here on the router of 10.0.0.100 to 10.0.0.149. Client lease time. And what this is, you're assigned an IP address through the DHCP server, and this will change every so often. In my case, it's every day, but you can change that to a certain amount of minutes or hours, or you can set it to 0, which means 1 day. Then there are, let's see, 3 DNS fields that you can set. And all 3 of mine are set to nothing because my DNS servers are acquired from my ISP. WINS, which is your Windows Internet Naming Service, is also not used, so it is set to nothing. And the last section is your time settings, which I don't think we need to go over, because I don't believe there's any questions on it. So, once you've gone through and changed your IP address, next step, we'll go up to administration and change the default password from admin to something else. Alright, so we clicked the administration link, and it comes up to a screen that is the management screen. And you also have under here log, which keeps track of inbound and outbound requests for IPs and various internet traffic. And you have diagnostics, which is just what it says. There are certain things that the router can diagnose itself. If you need help with it, then you can click that link. And factory defaults, which is just that. You can click this link and it will reset everything back to factory settings. And then you have your firmware upgrade, which you go to www.linksys.com and you go get new firmware, and you can put it on that way. Okay, so the first screen under this administration is management. That's the first one you'll come to. Then your first thing you'll come to is your router password, which is where you change from the default to whatever you want it to be. And generally I think it's 32 characters. Then you have to re-enter it. Web access is your next section. Now, this provides access to the router, both wireless and if you actually have a cable connected between the computer and the router. So there's 2 checkboxes here. It's HTTP, which is checked, and HTTPS, which is not. And that determines which port it goes to, 80 or 443. Alright, now you have web utility access via wireless, which I have enabled because, quite frankly, I don't have a computer hooked to the router. So it's just easier for me to do it wirelessly. Remote access, which means anybody outside the network, and this is disabled, which is a good security practice. Web utility access, which has the HTTP and HTTPS. These are radio buttons this time, and they are both not available because remote access is disabled. Remote upgrade, enable or disable are your options, but they are not available for the same reason that remote access has been disabled. Allowed remote IP address gives you access by any IP address or you can specify one, and it is not available. Remote management port. Default is 8080, and it is not available. UPnP is enabled, or of course your other option is disabled. Allow users to configure is enabled. Of course you have two radio buttons, enabled and disabled. And allow users to disable internet access is disabled. And also under the management screen, you can backup and restore configurations as you need to. Okay, that's that for the management. Let's go to status, because that will be rather important. And as it comes up, here we go. Alright. So, this gives the status information for the router, for your local network, and for the wireless. It gives firmware version, which is 1.03.6. Which is dated February 27th, 2007. Current time, which it says is 24th of July at 7:32 in the evening. Your internet MAC address, which doesn't matter for my ISP, but some of them might list that. Host and domain names are blank, which you set on the setups, basic setup screen. Internet connection is PPPoE. Login status is connected, because I'm on the internet right now. The internet IP address, which is the ISP, the IP address you obtain from your ISP, which I'm not going to read out because that's going to change. Subnet mask shows us 255.255.255.255, which is a point-to-point subnet mask. Default gateway is showing as 66.153.196.240. Then there is a primary and a secondary DNS server labeled DNS1 and DNS2, which is 66.153.162.98 is DNS1. And DNS2 is 66.153.128.98. There is no third DNS. Your MTU is 1,492 bytes. And you can refresh that. All right. Going up to wireless. And here you have basic wireless settings, which is the screen that you come up on. And you have wireless security and wireless MAC filter, which we will go over both of those in just a minute. The advanced wireless settings. So, under your basic wireless settings. Network mode shows as mixed, which means you can have wireless B, G, and N devices hooked in wirelessly to the router. Your network name, which is also called your SSID, is also listed here. Radio band is actually currently set to the wide channel, which is 40 megahertz. Wide channel is 9, standard channel is 11, and your options under your radio band are auto, standard, and wide. Your standard's 20 megahertz, your wide's 40 megahertz. And the auto takes whichever one it can get a hold of. SSID broadcast, I currently have mine enabled. Although it's a good idea to disable that for security purposes so people can't jump on your network. And that's the basic wireless settings. Alright, let's go configure security. So under security, and the SSID on my Linksys is AB Shaw, S-H-A-W, so it's A-B-S-H-A-W. Just in case the lab asks. So under wireless security, you have security mode, which is you can set as WEP, WPA, WPA2, or you can just leave it turned off, which is not a good idea. Because we don't have too many neighbors around us, we use WEP on this particular router. And if we have too many people jump in here and try to use our network, we'll probably end up swapping that out. Encryption. It's 128-bit key that is used, and it can either be 64 or 128-bit keys. So it's either 13 or 26 hex digits. There's a passphrase that you can put in here. And then there's 4 keys that you can put in. And mine currently only has one filled, which is key 1. And go down. The transmit key, which is the key that you use to access the wireless network, is currently set to 1 because that is the only one that's filled. Alright, and that's all there is to that. Wireless MAC filter. Okay. So you can either enable or disable the wireless MAC filter. If you enable it, then you have to allow access by MAC address. So anybody that comes over, you have to allow them on. So you have to log into the router, and then you tell the router to allow their MAC address. And I'll show you how to do that. So, there's an access restriction here, which says prevent PCs listed below from accessing the wireless network. And there's one that says permit PCs listed below to access the wireless network. And they have a list box here that you can put the MAC addresses of the PCs that you want to either allow or deny access to. And there's a wireless client list button that you can go and you hit this button. If your MAC address filtering is enabled, you hit this button and you can check the MAC addresses you want to allow or deny. And there are a maximum of 50 different MAC addresses right now that you can either allow or deny. And that is, I believe, based on the number of users. And this will grow with the number of users that you are allowing access to. So that number of users under your basic setup screen comes into play here as well. Alright, so that's all that. Now, let's go to access restrictions. And under here is where you set your access policies. So you can set up blocking or allowing of specific IP addresses, specific IP address ranges, or you can block by application like Telnet, HTTP, SMTP. That's all done here under the access restrictions. So you give it a name, and then you either enable it or disable it. And once it's enabled, there is an edit button that you apply to. And then you give it either deny or allow as the access restriction. And you can either allow or deny during specific days and hours, which there are checkboxes for all 7 days of the week. And there's two radio buttons that one specifies 24 hours and the other ones you click and then you specify time ranges. So say you want somebody to be able to access, you don't want somebody to be able to access the internet between 10 and 6. You click the second button, you specify 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. and you select it. And they can't get it. Website blocking. You can either block by URL, and there are 4 slots for this, or you can also block websites by keyword, and there are also 4 slots for this. So you can put in either 4 URLs or 4 keywords that you want to block. Now, blocked applications, which you can only block 3 applications per policy. So you can set up a good number of policies and block everything out if you want, but only 3 applications can be blocked per individual policy. Now, you can block by application name like Telnet, SMTP, HTTP, and then you can block by port range. So if you don't want chat messages coming through from port 6000 to 7000, that's where you specify here. And then you can also block by, then there's a combo box here for protocol, which is TCP, UDP, or both. You can add, modify, or delete policies as you need to. And that is access restrictions. So, let's go up to the last tab, which is applications and gaming. And I did these in sort of a not order they're in the tabs, but did the most important ones first. Alright, so applications and gaming. You come up to single port forwarding. And it gives application names. You have HTTP, SMTP, POP3, and Telnet, and FTP. And then there's edit boxes where you can put your own in. And then there's a table. There's about 10 of these that you can put your own applications in that you want to allow to forward. So you specify the external port, the internal port, the protocol, and then where which computer it's going to. Alright, so let's see. So we do actually have one in this table that was 10.0.0.15's in the edit box that you specified the last part of the IP address. And this is disabled. There's a checkbox by each of the IP addresses so that you can disable or enable that particular spot that you want. None of these have any ports. Actually, yes, they do. There's 10.0.0.15, which is no longer on my network. That doesn't have any checkboxes by it. 3306 is the external, 3306 is the internal, and it both protocols, both TCP and UDP, are allowed. And that was for MySQL. And the other one's remote desktop, which is 3389, which is the external and the internal port. And it's both, again, so TCP or UDP protocols. And IMAP is the last one, which the port is 143, both TCP and UDP protocols. And that's that. Now, there are three other options under here. So once you click the applications and gaming, you come up to the single port forwarding. We'll go ahead and do port range forwarding, which is primarily the same thing as single port forwarding. You specify the IP address that you want to forward to on your internal network, the external and the internal port ranges, and then it will forward them through. And there's about 10 of these that you can specify your own things. So you have a start and an end port protocol, and then you have the IP address that you want it forwarded to. So basically it's the same thing as single port forwarding, you're just doing multiple ports, say from 6,000 to 7,000, rather than just a single port. Alright, port range triggering is primarily the same thing. You give an application name, a triggered range, forwarded range, enabled or disabled with a checkbox. Um, and then it will open those ports. So, for instance, say you have ports 6000 and 7000 that are used for chat. You want those to be forwarded in. You specify those ports. And then you specify those ports, then you specify 6000 to 7000 to be forwarded. And it will open those ports until the session is done with the chat client. And the last one we're going to cover is the DMZ, or the demilitarized zone. And what happens with this is it's basically like taking one computer outside the router. Everything else is configured and kept behind the router. So, this is actually pretty useful for servers and different applications like that, but it opens up everything. Not just single ports, not just a range, it opens up everything. So it is good for servers, but you're better off with single port or port range forwarding. So, under the DMZ, you can enable it or disable it, which mine is currently disabled because I don't have a need for it. You have a source IP address, which is either any or you can specify it. And then you give it a destination. Either an IP or a MAC address. And you can find that in the DHCP client table, which is a button there, and then you can just check it. Check the MAC address or the IP address you want. And that's all there is to that. And then your computer is outside the router. So, that should give you everything you need for the labs. If you need anything further, you can shoot me an email or Skype me.